The good people at Manscaped have partnered with us here at the Beautifully Designed Game podcast with an exclusive offer just for you as a thank you for tuning in. Visit uk.manscaped.com, enter promo code TFT20 for 20% off your order. Believe me, your balls will thank you.
Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Beautifully Designed Game podcast. My name is Marcus Marrett, and today I am speaking to a man you have heard from before on this very same podcast. His name is Luke McCarthy. He lives in Glasgow. He is the design head behind Pim Pam Creative. He is what I describe as the Scottish Matthias Sammer and more when it comes to commanding a seven-a-side pitch. Luke, how are you doing today?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Thank you for the introduction.
No. I'm always very happy to introduce you in such a way. So if you could give people a wee introduction to yourself so they're not just hearing from me right now, that'd be grand.
Yeah, so yeah, as Marcus said, creative director at the business Pim Pam. We've been going for about, I think, 4 or 5 years now in Glasgow. And we're predominantly a creative design and digital studio based in Glasgow's Merchant City. But as well as a lot of client work that we take on, we like to do a lot of our own passion projects, which is how, obviously, we kind of get into where we're at just now with what we do with you, Marcus.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll get deep onto that shortly. And just a wee fresh there is a previous episode of the podcast where Luke gives us a deeper view into the work at Pim Pam and the football and sporting creative output of the agency. So I'd recommend, of course, I'd recommend people to go back and listen to a previous episode of this podcast. So on today's episode, we are generally going to chat the chat about the places that you consider to be home when it comes to either playing or watching or experiencing your football. Now, it's not just going to be about where you watch football. Luke, tell me if I'm wrong on this. I think we first met when there was a game of seven-a-side that I was organising at Fir Hill on a Thursday afternoons. And did Craig Black get you involved in those games? Because I was trying to think for this chat how it was that we first met, and I'm pretty sure it actually was on a football pitch.
It's a little bit earlier than that. So we work, our studio building is called South Block, and that's in, as I mentioned, obviously Merchant City in Glasgow. And it's a lot of kind of smaller size creative studios, kind of 3 to 4 people in the building, as well as a few bigger ones in the kind of top floors. And we started having this idea of putting on a football tournament with creative agencies in Glasgow. And it was quite a small thing. And like, obviously, we both know Craig, and I was chatting to Craig about it. And he was like, oh, you should get in touch with Marcus. Like, he's a goalkeeper. He'd love that, because obviously you were illustrating and, you know, not in the building at the time, but we thought this is something you could definitely get involved in. So got in touch with you, and from what I remember, I think we ended up with like 4 teams, and I think there was something that you couldn't make it for the actual tournament, but you said, but listen, I put on these different games, you should get in touch and we'll get, you know,
right,
wait for Hill.
You know what, sorry to jump in, I think it was because I was down south back. I've got a feeling it was because I was, you're just jogging my memory here. I think it was, I was down south back in the Shire visiting the family. Yeah. Okay, right. Okay, thanks for that refresh.
No, because we'd had, because we were putting this on and we thought this is quite a nice thing, because we've seen, like, you know, the Creative Cup and different things that people put on and different locations in the UK, and we thought, let's try and do something in Glasgow that kind of gets different people interacting outside of just the actual creative world, because there's a lot of kind of creative talks and creative catch-ups and all these things you can go to. But
yeah,
from what I remember, there was like, we ended up with like four teams, and I think it was like eight asides or something like that. So we were like South Block first floor, which was
right,
like
okay,
a
yeah,
lot of create, a lot of the creative studios kind of coming together because we needed more players. And then I think we had Freelance United, which was a bunch of freelancers who wanted to form a team, but were obviously working solo in their houses at the time. And then I think Screen Media, which is a big digital agency in the top floor of our building, and they regularly have a team, like they play on like Monday nights, I think it is, all the time. And then Frame, which is another agency in Glasgow. So these are the kind of bigger agencies that have got, you know, 50 people in them. So they were probably getting team selection done and that, whereas we were like scraping about to try and get players.
Yeah. Were you actually
For Hill.
Sorry to jump in. You actually play for the Scottish, or and you turn out for the Scottish Writers football team. Is that right?
Yeah, it's funny because this is like the amount of stuff from football that we've been involved in that's came from a creative side. I would never really thought it was something that kind of went on. So we obviously do a lot of kind of copywriting and creative writing as well, and we're obviously releasing books and things. Yeah. And Scottish Writers Football Club is a team predominantly of writers, you know, poets, novelists, journalists, people who are in any way involved in a lot of kind of the writing aspect of the, even like publications and online platforms and things. And we introduced to them, got a couple of games to them. So they play like kind of teams in different countries that are also writers' teams. So, you know, been over to like Switzerland and Italy, and we host teams here.
Yeah.
We've got a game against the English writers coming up in March as well, which is actually happening, I think, over at Glasgow Green. So that's going to be fun.
just a wee tip. And actually, you were kind enough, Luke, to introduce me to Peter, who organises the team. And I did get back to him to say that game could be the first that I'm around for. So at present, I think I'm third pick goalkeeper, which I'm very, very happy with. You know, others are ahead of me, you know, God bless them for that. And if I get one turnout, I'll be super happy with that, man. That'd be great. Because you played recently, is that right?
So we played against this. Occasionally get like friendly games as well with different teams, and we've played teams like Glasgow United and a few kind of more like charity based teams in Glasgow as well. So there's a lot of these teams kind of popping up and established, not just popping up. But the one we played there was Glasgow Piriton, which is like the Glasgow St Pauli supporters club.
Right, really.
And that was excellent. Yeah, that was a great game because it's all kind of played with like a good temperament, and you know, I think some of these guys play in different leagues as well with their own teams, but we just kind of get the friendly games in with them just as a way of keeping fit and keeping as a team before we turn up and get destroyed by you know, the Swedish Writers football team. So
was that at Glasgow Green?
That one was at Tory Glen, which is the it's like a huge sport complex over near Hampden, which is Scotland's national stadium. So I think there's a lot of training that happens in there with the national teams as well. Yeah. There's like, you know, maybe six or seven that live in the side pitches over there, so there's constant games going on. So it's kind of got that buzz about the place on a Saturday as well.
This is going to seem like the podcast is super well prepped and planned, but I will say this is a very seamless segue right now, because let's actually talk about the places that you can play and the facilities available in Glasgow. Because I can say, as someone who has lived in a number of countries and in a number of cities since university, I really early found in Glasgow that there are a lot of sports facilities like right across the board. And I think, as anyone that's never visited the city, I think it's a really great thing, and it stood out for me. And especially how many AstroTurf pitches there are in different areas. which is grand. And that most definitely got me into playing as much as I do now. So, you know, I like talking about it a lot because I, you know, I've gotten a lot from it, which is grand, you know. And so if I was to tell you, Luke, my three favorite venues to play in Glasgow, and then kind of you come back. So Tory Glen, so the Tory Glen Football Centre, we've started playing, well, it was kind of the back end of last year, that the seven-a-side game on Mondays I play. It's a really nice venue. We play on the outside pitches. And because, so I always pick the goal. I always do the shout out for the goal that I'd like to be in. Because unless one of my closest brothers, Ben, unless he is playing, I converted him into being a goalkeeper. And he's, it's grand to see how much he's improving each week. Unless he's there, I'm the only designated keeper. So I'll always do the shout out for what goal I like. And I always pick the goal that gives me like the best view, because as I'm not in the action, I'll just look back and think, oh, that would make a really great crop for an illustration. Or I just look around and take in the floodlights and, you know, just get distracted by the scenery, you know. And Tory
Glen. Is that your excuse, Marcus? So whenever are you letting a go, it's because you're in the middle of coming up with a new concept.
Well, listen, you know what? On that point, I'm going to do a shout out right now to Anton, who I play with on Mondays. And I think it was maybe November, early December last year. He did beat me from distance, and they were breaking from, I'm sure they were breaking from a corner. I might be wrong on the specific corner part, but I don't think I was enormously far out, but I was lax, and Anton really took advantage of it. And I think it'd only be fair that I gave Anton a shout out from that, because it's not the first time he's beaten me.
Nope, that's fair enough. Yeah.
He's good at that. And he's good at that. But yeah, you know, it's I always pick the goal that then gives me a view of the actual Tory Glen kind of dome. Behind the goal that I'm facing, because it just gives it a good setup there, you know. And then second, I would say the famous Glasgow Green, which we can get onto shortly. And then the Power League at Townhead, the venue that I think, because there's the church right next to the seven-a-side pitch, or the bigger pitch down at the end. Playing there at night, just when that's lit up, it gives it that real nice hint to the architecture in the city of Glasgow, you know.
Yeah, nice. Is it all the kind of seven-a-side ones as well? Yeah, or then five-a-side ones, or
actually, well, you know what? Because five-a-side only happens for me on Saturday mornings now. And that's the more, you know, if you play a few games, you'll always have one that's slightly more casual. It's a Saturday morning, slightly more fun, you know, not that every game isn't fun, but you know, you have a game that's slightly more relaxed. So I don't play much five-a-side now, which I'm lucky about. And I'm going to stick to that. Oh, sorry. And one final shout out, the Power League at Paisley, which is the Tuesday game that you've gotten me involved in.
Yeah.
It's got a real Craven Cottage feel to it, don't you think?
It does, yeah, yeah. It's got the old building and stuff. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, can you remember the name of the building so people can... Is it actually at the rugby... Is it at Paisley Rugby Club? Because it is a really nice old building. And if anyone gets a chance to go there, I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, so they've got the rugby club next to it, and then it used to be called the Paisley Pits, and I think it was its own independent club, and now it's obviously part of the Power League chain. But it's a cracking venue, and to be honest, like, the pitches got relayed like not too long ago, and it's like one of the, like, it's in my top three as well. It's like as far as surfaces go in Glasgow, that's sometimes where you can decide if you like the place or not, because some of the times you're running and it's like feels like you're just playing in concrete, but when something's, especially AstroTurf, if it's been there for a while, it just starts to kind of get ran into the ground. But that one's like held up quite well.
Oh, good, man.
And, you know, it's not got that kind of carpet feel to it yet, so...
Oh, anything to avoid anything to avoid those burns that you can only get from AstroTurf, you know?
Oh, definitely, yeah, definitely. I mean, like, kind of, I think if I was going to say, like, kind of three, like, we played in as well, like, I'd have the Power League in Paisley right up there, because I think I've probably played there since I was about 13.
Yeah, okay.
Growing up, and that's, like, one of the ones that have, you know, we've kind of had, like, a Tuesday game on the go, which has probably been since we were about 19, and it just somehow keeps going, and that's, like, went from five-a-sides to seven-a-sides, back to fives to sevens,
but
it's mostly been held at the Power League.
Isn't it, sorry to jump in, isn't it amazing how you can have a game that, like, it can maybe start off, excuse me, it can maybe start being, like, an after-work game, but develops in such a way that it ends up being like a social thing, and maybe someone else starts organising it, so it then develops with a different crowd, and it's almost as if you have this one fixture that just morphs and develops with different players and different people and different vibes over time, you know?
Well, I sometimes think about this as well, because, like, I've got no idea how we used to arrange this when we were 19. Because, like, now you've got, like, a WhatsApp group or a Facebook group, and everyone's, like, jumped in there. There's 30 people, but only, like, five people reply when the shout-out goes to who wants to play. It's like, oh, who's going to play football this week? And it's, like, everyone's waiting to see who's playing before they obviously put their name down. But
actually,
then,
you've made a good point there, and it's fun to think about those little quirks. Those little quirks that always seem to crop up in any kind of group or game that you're involved in. And you're right, there's the fact that you can have 30, 40 people in a WhatsApp group and you still struggle to get players. And
it's crazy,
and
that's a game that's been going for, you know, all of a sudden, you know, like, if you don't have a player the day before, there's like a panic and everyone's trying to get a player. But then, like, as I say, like, when we started this game, like, say when we were like kind of early 20s, like, you just, everyone said they were in on the pitch the week before, and if they didn't turn up, it was their fault.
You just assumed
that everyone was going to turn up, or someone would bring a body and all that. But it's fun to think about. But, like, I'd definitely say Power League Paisley's up there. And Tory Glen, like, I really love playing at Tory Glen as well. I think if we're talking, obviously, Glasgow places to play, like, Tory Glen is one of the best facilities, and they often, like, split the pitch inside into, like, kind of four pitches.
Okay.
But it's a cracking big 11-a-side pitch as well, which we've played at quite a few times. You know, full size, and then obviously the other pitches outside are great. So I think that's another one of my favourite places to play in Glasgow. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of others, which is like kind of the Townhead one that you mentioned. It's a few Glasgow Green, but just from my own point of view, one of probably my third favourite place to play is Goals in Clydebank.
It's
the venue, but it's also the guys that I played with out there. It's a couple of the guys that I met through art school, and again, from a kind of creative side, that's how I got involved in this game, just because I knew the guys that, you know, we were doing this with. And it's funny you talk about wee quirks and stuff, because when you play different games in different venues, it's like, you know, you're in one city, but everyone's got their own rules in all these different places. So you go to one game and it's keeper can't come out the box, keeper can come out the box in a different venue, or you can't go inside the box, or you can go inside the box. And sometimes you don't know what rules you're playing. So I remember, like, one time, like, the keepers were allowed out the box and I had the ball and I was assuming nothing was going to happen. And kind of was running through and I get totally cleared out by the keeper at the halfway line. And I was like, what's going on? Like,
Was that five or seven
aside? That was sevens, I think. But there was a box, but that was seven aside. But one of the funniest ones is, sorry to jump in. Oh, I know, yeah.
But this shows how different it is. I mean, it'd be a different challenge, I guess, playing sevens and not being allowed out of the area. But I personally have never known that. unless it was like a training drill, you know.
Yeah, it's just, but that's the thing. And then there's different rules where it's like, oh, the ball goes above head height and all this kind of stuff. And
yeah,
you kind of need to know what you're playing. It's you know, it's different venues and different groups of people, but they're all playing their own rules. But the thing that always kind of cracks me up about the one in Clyde Bank, it goes, is that two of my best friends that playing it, Doug and Darren. So they were flatmates at the time. And we used to have this thing. So when we played in Paisley, if the ball went in the corner, like, you know, you'd let the guy turn and get out because there's no point
just getting corner. But,
but basically, like this one in Clyde Bank, it's like everyone runs to the corner and everyone's legs are in there, and it's like
everyone's swinging at the ball. Same. Yeah,
and you're like, what? Let them out, and everyone's elbows are flying everywhere. And, like, Doug and Dan, like, I think they used to try and get out some kind of like frustration from living together with each other in the corner. They would beat lumps at each other. It's like a total massacre. Then after the game, I was like, they're going to fight. Like, they're going to get in a fight after this game.
Yeah.
And then we'd finish the game and they'd be like, right, good game. Let's go and play Pro Evo. And that's like, it's something that it kind of, because they would play in the game in Paisley. And I remember one of the times I invited them over to this other venue, it was very much like, yeah, guys, just so you know, like, we don't do that stuff that you do in the corner over here. Part of that, like, keep that for Clyde Bank, but you know, this is how we do it. But kind of Power League Paisley, Tory Glen, and I'd say goals in Clyde Bank, so kind of three that kind of resonate with me the most.
Well, you've touched on a few points that I was going to ask you about, what it is that makes you enjoy playing at a venue. You know, the places that I get to play each week in Glasgow, there's a mix of if we happen to be playing at Tory Glen, it feels like, oh, this is like playing at the big stadium, you know, the big new built stadium, which is fab. But then when it's playing at either Townhead or Paisley, you've got that real beautiful old world architecture near you. And so it feels like you're playing around a wee bit of history in that, you know, because as a keeper, like, I take in the surroundings a lot, and especially when it comes to five-a-side, because you've got those other pitches right next to you. I do like lending an ear over to games that are happening elsewhere, you know, because you get a chance to as a keeper, and so it feels as if I'm kind of touching on the adventures that are happening in the other games, you know, because all of those games, well, you know, not all of them, there might be some that are with a younger crowd, but they all tend to be adults that have come together from having lived very separate lives during the week. And often it's the only time that they actually cross paths with each other. It's this game that they're playing, you know, and, that's just where my head goes and starts thinking about, oh, what's happening over there, especially whenever you hear any, you know, any wee bits of aggro that, you know, living in Glasgow is only just mates being mates, you know. But it's always grand to take in and just adds to the setting of where you're playing, you know.
Yeah, no, I know the amount of, I think the amount of, like, times you've maybe played in even leagues and stuff like that down at, like, the five-a-side places, and you hear, oh yeah, I'll see you in the car park after type stuff, but then nothing ever transpires. It's all pitch talk.
Absolutely. And so can you rather than me hyping you up as I always seem to do, can you give people a bit of an insight to you as a football player? Where would you consider your position to be?
It's funny, like, probably centre backs where I would play, like, 11 asides, and if playing sevens and stuff, I'm more often than not kind of hanging around somewhere near the back or in the middle, probably just because my shooting's atrocious, I would say. But that's kind of where I've kind of naturally done it. I think one of the last things we caught up as well, like, when I was in school, I was a goalkeeper, like, as well as you, and it was only maybe after, I think it was kind of secondary school, I started playing outfield, But I still kind of had this idea of like watching the game happen in front of me.
Because
I think from a goalkeeping position, that's what you do. You kind of read the game and you're telling people what to do or trying to kind of organise things.
Yeah.
And it was almost like just kind of stepping that wee bit further forward and kind of sitting in that position. But it was, but I mean, the seven aside, so often it depends on how many, who else is in your team as well. Because you could be sat there and you've got like seven defenders in your team and someone's like, right, one of us is going to have to, one of us is going to have to go a little bit further up here and get a nosebleed going at these high altitudes. Yeah. But yeah, it's a tricky one.
When you're bursting forward yourself, as I've seen you do many times, and do everything you can to burst the net, are you letting out anger when you're hitting your long range efforts with that much power? Or is it just the only way that you know to strike the ball?
It depends who's in goals, Marcus.
So. Is that true? Right. Is that true? And we actually haven't faced each other that often, have we? Even on the Tuesday games when we play in the same group, it tends to be on the same side.
Yeah. I think it's only a couple of times. Yeah. And maybe up at kind of Fir Hill and a couple of other places as well.
Yeah.
And then it's obviously that kind of regular midweek one, which we've not played for a while, but that's the one that's like 15 games a week type thing. But I think maybe only a few times we've played against each other. So
that's true. Well, my palms still feel the stings. I can say that. I can say that most definitely. Well, moving on from playing football to sitting back and watching it and experiencing it. Now, any listeners that have heard the previous podcast with yourself will remember the side that you sit on in Glasgow, and it's a very happy morning for you on this day. Can you give us a wee insight to your favourite football stadiums to have visited, either for the atmosphere or architecturally? There's something about the stadium that you really like, or there was something about the experience?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's probably like, there's a few I could probably talk about. Like, as you touched on, I'm a Celtic fan, and Celtic Park's like for a venue.
Famous for that.
Like atmosphere and stuff's just incredible. The very, very first game I ever went to, it was my dad and my brother and me. I can't remember what age I was pretty young, but it was a St Mirren game, and St Mirren are obviously the Paisley team.
Right.
And they were playing Ayr United, and I think they were playing in the first division at this point, but it was our old stadium. So it was a stadium called Love Street, and it was, they still had like standing behind the goals at this point, I think. But I always remember it, St Mirren versus Ayr United, the first game I'd ever went to, and just the atmosphere and the kind of, this is going to sound silly, but like the smells.
Yeah,
as well,
absolutely.
Like the eyes, and I think you could still smoke
or
something like that, maybe in the stadium. So like all this kind of stuff going on, and like as a stadium, like just because it's like that kind of nostalgic thing in my head, I remember the walk up because it was like kind of slight hill that took you up into the stadium as well. Yeah. It's got a wee place there as well. And obviously that's probably two in Scotland, but one that we went to before as well in Germany was Hertha Berlin Stadium.
Oh, really?
Which is is it called the Olympic Stadium? Or I think it's just the Olympic Stadium, maybe. But it almost looks like the Colosseum. So it's like all stonework on the outside, and it's got a big blue racetrack on the inside as well. But we just went there. It was a trip when we were in the art school. So there was a group of us from the art school that decided to get the training to go see the stadium. We weren't expecting to go to a game. And we went on the stadium tour, and they've got this huge kind of stone staircase in the middle, which kind of cuts the stadium behind one of the goals. And I think that was obviously from the Olympics that was held there. They had like the torch at the top of the staircase. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You can kind of see right out, and it's an incredible stadium. And it was only when we were there and we were kind of chatting to guys in the store, and I think they gave us like discounted tickets for a game that night.
Oh,
so we ended up having like this whole experience and went to the game and everything else, and it was amazing. And as I say, in terms of like the structure of a stadium, because as you say, like it's like the kind of big new stadium that's built in steel and everything else, and then you've got, you know, your Craven Cottage type styles.
Yeah,
and then there's this like stonework Colosseum. And, you know, in the middle of like this Olympic park that's used by Hertha Berlin, and it's incredible. It's amazing.
One one thing I've really started to notice a lot and in really enjoy seeing over time is how Sinsel Bank, which is the home stadium of Lincoln City, which from where I grew up, that's really my local team back home. And my nephew is 17 now, super into football and plays a lot. And we go often to see Lincoln now when I'm back south, and even seeing either the box. So on Boxing Day or New Year, they'll always be at home on one of them. So that's a wee nice kind of tradition we've got into the role of now. And my first ever live game, my dad took me to see Lincoln City versus Crystal Palace in the League Cup. I don't remember which year. I could look back. It must have been about 90, I'm going to say 94 or 95, that kind of era. And so it's however many decades on now, like going back and seeing how Sinsel Bank has grown, and that stadium is this big now, and there's this whole part there now. And I mean, it's been connected to how well the club has done, but just seeing how a stadium that they haven't built one completely brand new and fresh, and it's nice to have seen how one that you've seen after however many years still be there and having grown. It's really nice to see, you know.
Yeah. And it's fun as well, because like when you go to some of the older stadiums, like there's the whole thing about distance from fans to the pitch as well.
Yeah.
So obviously on the kind of on new build stadiums, you almost feel so much further away from the action. But then I suppose that's one of the kind of main talking points that always comes with the Emirates and Highbury, isn't it? So it's like how close you were and how influential the fans were to what's happening on the pitch, because you kind of you're right on top of the opposition. Yeah. Whereas the kind of new build stadiums you go to, you are so much further away from the action.
You know what? I've always had a soft spot for West Ham, and my best mate supports West Ham, and the couple of times I lived in London, it was in kind of Canary Wharf, so not a million miles away from especially where they play now. But I've always thought that if I could have gone back in time and experienced an atmosphere, I think Upton Park, like a rocking Upton Park, looks like it would have just been insane. But even the last season there under Slaven Bilic a couple of years ago, when they had a really good season, it looked as if every home game the West Ham fans were making the most of still being there. And you know what? Growth and development and advancement is all great, but I really do think there is a lot that has to be considered when it comes into building a new stadium. And I know there's an infinite more when it comes to the commercial world and the commercial world and the business world that, you know, I'm infinitely naive about when it's not coming into why new stadiums get built. But there really must be something that can be lost that you can't get back, you know. But then make that same atmosphere, and you know, you don't have to allow that to happen. You can still, you know, over time allow that to build, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
How much has Celtic Park changed over the years that you've been going?
I can't really tell, to be honest.
Because I mean, I guess it always must have, you know, been enormous. Anyway, but in terms of the structure or how the experience has seemed, has that really developed or changed for you over time?
I think what changes is just naturally as you get older, like your experience of it changes.
Yeah.
So like going when I was like a wee boy, it's, you know, it's just dominates everything. Like you're not like kind of thinking, and you're like constantly looking up, and then the noise and everything else.
And
when you're getting older, you're almost rushing to the stadium.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you're a kid, you're there like 30, 40 minutes early. You're kind of sat in your seat. You've got like a hot dog or whatever else. You're just kind of waiting. Whereas like when you're older, you've maybe been at the pub and you're like, what's that time? And you're bolting for the stadium to kind of get there for kickoff. And you take it in when you're inside, but when you're kind of running up to it, I know that's, you know, the kind of strange way of thinking that you're kind of running up to it, but when you're a child, you're kind of on the outside, you're looking at the guy selling the scarves, kind of the smell of like the donut vans and stuff like that on the walk up. It's all that kind of stuff you're taking in a lot more, I think, when you're younger. So it's more that I don't think the stadium's changed, but maybe just like my perception of
the
experience changes in that way.
And as a kid, you can always remember that first time that you either walked up the steps and the pitch then revealed itself and you really then saw the other stands growing and growing, or however it was that in your stadia or at your football home, you walked in and all of a sudden it was revealed to you as a kid. That's it's that kind of sense of awe kind of stays it's with funny. You, but then is with you in a different way as time passes, you know?
I don't know if you do this as well, but see what you said about that kind of the review of the pitch. You ever kind of like get in the stadium, you're almost still rushing to just get a peek at the pitch and see the pitch and see the green. Yes. So you get in and you kind of see, like, you know, sometimes there's a wee gap at a corner, so you're not even up high, but you can just see the green.
Yeah,
and you're
like,
I can see the pitch. I can see the pitch.
Yeah,
this kind of thing comes over you, like, I can see the grass. You're like, calm down.
So helps you realise you're there. Well, I went to see Motherwell play for the first time last week. They're at home to Hibs. And I had really fancied picking a Scottish league game and going to experience the match and as well as taking in the stadia and the atmosphere and whatever that club is all about. And I really had that at Fir Park. It's a really beautifully traditional stadium. And even the seats I was in, so I was in a particular section of the Phil O'Donnell stand. And, you know, I really like the colour palette of Motherwell. It's very unique and it's just a very lush colour palette. And the seats were wooden and they were painted in that kind of real kind of deep maroon of Motherwell and just lots of touches like that. And we were so close to the pitch and quite high up that I really had to stand up and peer round to be able to see the benches because we were so close to them. You know, when your stand is so close but raised, it's almost as if things disappear in front of you and get tucked under. Mm-hmm. And it was, and even the fact that there's this one great big oversized stand, and the Hibs away traveling fans were in that, but they were the only fans in this stand. So it just, there was this great big funny spectacle that I kept taking in, and the Hibs fans were brilliant all the way through the game. They were making a lot of noise, which was great. But you had like the one dominating kind of stand at Fir Park, and there's just like less than a quarter of it full by these Hibs fans that were making kind of exponentially so much noise and activity. You know, it's like a little funny scene that you only get from places like that, you know. And so talking of home and the places that make us feel home when it comes to our connection to football. So for those unaware, Luke and I partner together on the Home series of books, and the volume one of which we released last year. Now, Luke, when it comes to the choice of stadia that came into volume one and the list that we already have earmarked for volume two and three, let's remind ourselves of how it came to be that we made the choices that we did. Because I, from my perspective, it was picking out stadia that were both really engaging to illustrate, so visually had something to really pull on. But I also wanted to pick Stadia and celebrate Stadia and clubs from across the world. So there was a wee bit of those when it came to my choices. And actually, it wasn't until very late on that I switched out another for Villarreal's Stadia, the Estadio Ceramica, because I'd only noticed until that late on what a beautiful, amazing structure it is. Did you have any other considerations when it came to the Stadia that you really wanted to hero, at least in this series, or not even necessarily just volume one?
Yeah, do you know what, it's funny to say that, because there was a list that we'd kind of had in the book that then got taken out as well. And one of the ones I always felt bad that we'd taken out was Easter Road, because I think the illustration, the song, and as a stadium, it's an incredible venue to go to as well. But you know, that way you're almost like saying, yeah, this is the first one, but we're doing more. So you've got to save the other ones. You can't throw all the well, they are all brilliant, obviously, like all of them are great, but you can't throw the main hitters all into the first one, you know. Yeah. You've got to pace yourself with these
things, which is why.
I was like, that was very much like, there's so many more we've got in the list, and the ones that, as you say, have already been done. I mean, we literally have the designs done, we've got everything ready, but it's for the next ones, because you're kind of giving everything its own space as well. And I think when we spoke about it, like that was a kind of key decision to talk about the Glasgow teams, just have Celtic in the first one, and then when we move on and we have Ibrox, that's in its own book as well.
Absolutely,
and that's not to keep them apart from
no, absolutely not.
It's a conscious decision to do this. Whereas like we have, you know, we've got both Milan teams in this one, but then we know there's other stuff coming there. So there's a lot of stuff to come. And I think it was more just kind of strategically trying to plan out what makes a good volume two, what makes a good volume three with what we've got and what we're planning as well. So and there's a lot of ideas for those as well. I don't know if you want to kind of touch on what we're thinking for the second one, but
well, just one question I did want to ask yourself, and so letting people know that it was really Luke's skew to bring in the song lyrics and obviously wanting to create what was more than just a collection of Stadia portraits. It was okay, well, how can we celebrate more than that, and the real, what really makes them feel like home? And it was your idea to, okay, well, let's celebrate the songs that are sung there, and then hero the local language, and really give it that skew. So where did that song lyric angle come to you, or was it a natural fit in that if we're celebrating where we consider to be our football home, the songs that are sung there are so centrally part of that is fundamental here.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, like when you go to any of the stadiums, like, you know, if you're the home fan, or you know, you're an away visit, and you can hear them belting out, and everyone's kind of one community, like this one kind of celebration. And again, the other thing that I always love is like if going to a stadium abroad, and just hearing them belting out, you know, the songs in different languages and stuff as well. And you kind of don't know what they're saying, obviously, half the time. But it's just this feeling and this atmosphere, and you kind of know that you're now in their home, if that makes sense. And
then absolutely.
And that's kind of part of it. I think the whole idea was that we wanted to do something with, you know, your kind of portfolio of all these different stadiums, but what's like something that's not just putting them all in a book for the sake of putting them in a book, something that's, as you say, a celebration. It's talking about the stadiums, the capacities, the names, the cities, the countries, but then also, right, if we're doing it about the countries and the home, why don't we treat it as if it's actually, you know, like you're there, like you're it's in a different language, so you're not fully understanding it unless you're kind of researching it, or if you speak that language but you don't speak another one. And it felt like the right fit. You know, it felt like there was so much that kind of worked in unison with your illustrations as well, because again, you're just kind of giving everyone a kind of full spread, documenting the stadium. And I think as well, like, there was something with me, especially for the cover, when we were looking at the stadiums and the shapes, they felt so musical, like almost like musical notes and things like that as well. And yeah, it just kind of all started to fit together quite nicely. But I think that's kind of part of it, because you've got to have these discussions and try and come up with ideas and generations, because there's a lot of different stuff we kind of thought of and just put to the side. So like, oh, that's not going to work, that's going to work. But then when you land on something that you know this is actually spot on, this is what we need to do, it just, as you say, just to kind of all came together. The researching of the songs was tricky though. some of them. So getting some of the right ones and speaking to fans in different countries and trying to get people to help us with some of the translations and stuff, because we obviously want to get it right. That was the trickier part.
And also just to be clear that the songs that are highlighted for each club, we are not saying that this is the only song or this is your number one absolute anthem. It's just giving others a wee bit of a tease to the atmosphere that happens there. And it's funny how being vocal and the vocals of a stadia really add to the atmosphere. And you touched on it a wee bit ago yourself, and it made me think that how funny when you're watching say an Italian game or any game of football outside of your own country, and you can hear the crowd and they are singing in their native language, so you can't follow the lyrics, but they're singing in the same tune as what you hear in every English ground every week. And so it's funny that that right across different countries use the same tune or the same rhythm, and it's essentially the same chant, but they adopt it for themselves, and there's a great kind of connectivity across all homes and in that way, and that's great. And it reminded me that this Tuesday, and I've still actually got it a wee bit now, and it never normally happens, but I woke up on Tuesday with a bit of a sore throat after playing on Monday, because I'm very vocal when I'm in goal. It's not that I expect people to be listening to me, but for me, it genuinely helps me feel connected to the game. And it's either kind of giving out instructions or just being overly positive. Even when Neil blasts another 20-yard effort over the bar and we're still 3-0 down with 5 minutes to go, you know? But it's that vocal nature that really kind of connects me to even the games and the seven-a-side games that I'm playing in, or then, you know, belting out those anthems when you're watching your side with thousands of people around you, you know?
Exactly.
It's funny that especially when the action is at the other end of the pitch, it's funny, I will honestly sometimes just shout out something that doesn't make sense or nonsense, but I know sounds like me shouting out down the line or cut back, because I know no one's really listening to me, so I can really get away with just talking to myself or just entertaining myself in goal, you know. Not a good reveal that I'm not always switched on there, but you know.
No. You're listening to the pitch. You're too busy listening to the pitch next door. That's it.
That's very true. So I think now would be a good point for us to start talking about our, as you and I have done before, talking about our favourite goalkeeper, centre-back or defender partnerships. As you know, I would consider Luke to be maybe a Lothar Matthäus to my Oliver Kahn, that kind of a setup. So I think it would be good for us to just chat about our favourite goalkeeper defenders, just to round off this chat.
Yep, sounds good. Would you like to go first then, Marcus?
Well, I will. And we were chatting beforehand, and it's funny how your picks opened my eyes up to who I hadn't picked. So I don't have any Italian connection in those that I would highlight. Not for any particular reason, but when I had written these down, they felt so, because as well as being kind of brilliant players, they kind of represent an era to me that, because it was a certain era, will always have that little more of a special feeling for me, you know. You know, because you've got, you can have nostalgia when it comes to such things, like an objective opinion can be swayed by, you know, how nostalgic you can be. So for me, there's the ultimate partnership, because it happened for both Manchester United and for France, was Fabien Barthez and Laurent Blanc. I think I could go for that. And times when I have a freshly shaven head and my mustache, and I do have a Barthez France shirt, I think there's not an enormous difference between the way the two of us look. And Laurent Blanc, as with yourself, Luke, is more than capable of playing with the ball at his feet. I'm not sure he had quite the smashing it from 30 yards skill that you have, but, you know, he couldn't have everything. So who would be, that's my first pick. Who's your next pick?
Well, obviously mention the Italians, but I'll start with the Spanish players.
Yeah, go on.
Because I felt that, I always think they get overlooked. And amongst the Spain team, saying it was 2010, like World Cup winning Spain team. Okay. And it was obviously Iniesta and Alonso and Xavi and everyone in the middle. And I think it was David Villa up top. But I don't know if Torres was still, I don't know if he's playing at the time stuff as well. But obviously the team was incredible. But the back line was Casillas in goal and Puyol in front of him. And I always loved Puyol as a centre back. He's like one of my favourite centre backs. And it was not just like how good he was, but it was just his attitude, his mentality. And like how he just kind of constantly just got on with the game and kind of got everyone kind of in the right areas and places and stuff like that. And, you know, he was partnered with, you know, Piqué and then Ramos as well, who I think was probably playing the right back at the time. And then you look at how good Ramos is as a centre back.
Yeah.
And I think to kind of say, you wouldn't think they were overlooked because of how good they were, but like that's, you know, your World Cup winning Spain team, and they were, you know, a fantastic partnership as well. And that's basically just Barcelona and Real Madrid right there in your back line at the time.
Yeah.
Obviously the most dominant two teams at the time as well, so I'd probably say Casillas and Puyol.
Very good. Now I'm touching on the German blood that I have in these veins and representing for my Oma in this next pick, Oliver Kahn. And you could pick a number of defenders. I'm going to say Lothar Matthäus. Because, unless I'm mistaken, even though you are as close to Matthäus Sammer as you could get, he never played with Oliver Kahn at club football. He played for Dortmund, if I remember correctly, and for some reason, it's the fact that they represented at international and club level that. And again, the era, because I mean, for me, Lothar Matthäus goes from Italia 90, which was the most romantic football has and then will ever be. Other than Barcelona 99. I can't help but smile with an enormous grin on my face when I say that. Again, I will say that those two players make me think of a certain era. And, you know, from a footballing perspective, you could highlight others. But, you know, even the fashion and the kits I saw them wearing, they have just that little bit of magic dust, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think, like, for a second one from my side, Yeah. I feel like I'm just looking at countries as well all the time here. But
yeah, I know. I don't know what. Yeah, yeah, that's come to me that.
Yeah, but you've got like this kind of two different. It's almost two different Italian teams, but they feel like they're the same Italian team. So yeah, you know, okay. you had Buffon and Cannavaro, but yeah. Then like just before that, you had Toldo and Maldini and Nesta.
Yeah,
and you're like, that's like two different pairings, completely different pairings with the same country, literally one generation after the other.
Yeah,
and you're like that's incredible to think that's what came, because you know one thing like, oh, the centre backs are moving on, like who's the next person to come in, and you know you're sat there in like kind of late '90s or whatever, or kind of early 2000s, going, oh, it's Toldo and Maldini and Nesta, yeah. And then they move away, and you're like, who's in next? Oh, it's Buffon and Cannavaro.
Yeah,
and that's just an incredible.
And you remember Pagliuca? You remember Pagliuca before Toldo and Angelo Peruzzi? And Walter Zenger before that. You remember Walter Zenger in the shiny silver shirt and his I always remember his impressive gold neckwear against that shiny silver shirt.
Oh yeah, they'd always have it on. I know.
Yeah,
that's the thing, because like, we used to kind of growing up, like, we used to always watch Football Italia.
Yes.
I can still remember like the intro, the song, and all that kind of stuff with Football Italia. So I just seem to have this like knowledge and like obsession with like Italian teams and Italian players, and it's crazy to think like this. You know, it's obviously not on anymore, and you can't, you know, you kind of moved on from these things as well. But like, because you know, you're 30 years on from when I was probably watching some of this stuff.
Yeah,
but that's kind of where like a lot of kind of football knowledge and kind of watching it comes from as well. Just like these kind of old shows and watching these players, and that's when like obviously like so Shevchenko. Is like the height of his game playing in AC Milan and all these kind of different things as well. And I think that's naturally why when I'm thinking, you can't kind of pick pairings past some of these guys. In modern days, definitely you've got Van Dijk and Alisson and things like that as well just now. But like that's the kind of guys that kind of resonate with me.
But then that shows that there's more, you have a greater connection than kind of allows you to just be purely objective, because if you were being purely objective you would forget about those players that mean that little bit extra to you, because they either represent a period of your life or a certain team that you really liked at the time, you know. So it's actually your love of the sport kind of gives you that chance to be more than just objective when it comes to, oh, he is objectively a better player than, or he means more to me than him, you know, which is a grand thing.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so touching on what looks ahead for Pim Pam, actually, let's touch on what is happening for Luke McCarthy work-wise in the sporting world. Is there anything you can give us a wee insight to, or anything you'd like to hint at that's happening?
Well, we're obviously doing a lot of stuff for the guys at UEFA for Euro 2020 and Euro and 2021.
Okay.
And obviously because it moved on a year, and we we've got quite a lot on in sport in general just now. So there's a few things with football. We're speaking to the guys at Scottish Football Museum about some exciting stuff coming up as well.
Interesting. Yeah.
And we're also
For those that don't know, is that in Hampden, the Scottish Football Museum?
Yeah. So it's in Hampden, and it's a great place to actually visit if you're doing the stadium tour as well. It's a kind of nice kind of build on to it. And we've got some exciting stuff coming up with them, and Just in general in sport, we're doing some nice stuff in table tennis at the moment as well. So we'd obviously had our charitable table tennis projects on before Christmas, which was called Backspin, and it involved over 60 artists across the UK taking part.
Yeah,
and it was fantastic project to take on, and it was great. Like just all these different artists collaborating, kind of established artists through to kind of new graduates. But since then, we've got a few other exciting projects and table tennis coming up as well, which is really, really exciting. So we'll see what happens in the next couple of months with that as well. Keep you posted.
And do you play table tennis much yourself?
Yeah, we play it in the office, and it can sometimes get a bit too competitive. So if you think I'm composed in any way at football, I'm the most erratic, angry table tennis player in the world. Yeah. It brings out something else in me, I think. So, but yeah, we often play the kind of the guys next door and stuff like that as well in the office. So it's good. It's good fun.
Happy days. Very good. Very good. And exciting times for you as a Celtic fan after last night's result. That can probably reveal to people what day we're talking to each other today.
Yeah, a slightly croaky voice from a lot of shouting last night as well, but. Yeah, it's exciting. So we're, you know, top of the league now, but we'll see what happens. It's an exciting time with a lot of new signings in, and everyone seems to have kind of formed quite well as a team, and a few people coming back from injury as well, which is great. So we'll see what happens in the kind of last kind of 13, 14 games of the season. I think top of the league, we'll take that right now. Take that anything. Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. Well, can you, Luke, can you let people know where they can find a little bit more information out about the home series of books?
Yeah, so we've got the website, which is homestadia.com, and at the moment, volume one's available on there, and it's available in the UK for delivery, and we can deliver abroad, but you probably have to get in touch with us because there's a few complications based on obviously the book size and weight with getting it to certain different countries. So you're better getting in touch directly with us on that one.
Fabulous. Brilliant. And also where people can follow you yourself and can keep up with everything that's happening at Pim Pam.
Yeah, so website's pim-pam.co.uk, and we've got kind of social channels, obviously with Instagram being the main one that we work on because it's much more visual in terms of the work that we do, and we've got our Twitter and LinkedIn as well, so feel free to get in touch and give us a follow and see what we're up to.
Brilliant, lovely stuff. Well, I will see you when I'm next back in Glasgow for a Tuesday evening game, and it'll be after a wee break as well. So look back to getting on a pitch with you again soon.
Sounds great. Sounds great, Marcus. Thanks very much again for having me on.
No worries. Thanks very much, Luke. Thanks very much.
Cheers, mate.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists, and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.